particular about having to walk down there to speak to you and walk back up here and fix something on this and walk back down there and walk back up and walk back down there. So, glad y'all were able to do that for me this morning. Last week, anybody remember either the verses we read or what we talked about last week? Those of you who were here. Talked about evangelism. Good. Anybody remember the verses we read from? Something Paul wrote. Thank you, Brandon. 1 Corinthians 9, 16 and 27. Now, I told you last week I want you to focus on doing evangelism around you, to the people you see every day, people you run into every day. And that's very important. But this morning, I want us to focus a little bit further. I want us to look at missions in today's world. And I really want to talk about the entire world, the mission field that we have around us. Now, what I basically want to do this morning, what I'm going to be doing is showing you a lot of statistics of the world today. And I want to show you that the world we are looking at today is very different from the world that Jesus was looking at during his time when he told the disciples, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every nation. There are a lot of things that have changed since Jesus' time. And we need to ask ourselves this morning, are we fulfilling the Great Commission as Jesus commanded it? The first thing I want to show you is a statistic on the way the world has grown since Jesus was first given the commission to his disciples up until the world today, and how there seems to be a population explosion. If you take a look at some of these numbers I've put up here, you see that in AD 1, the world contained about 200 to 300 million people. In 32 years, only grew about 50 million. And you can see some of the ways the world grew very slowly at the first turn of the first century. 1793, the date I've got, the reason I have that date up there is that's the day people agree that modern missions probably began, when William Carey went to, I think it was China or India. Look in the last couple years, 1990 to 2000, the world has grown by about 800 billion people in the last 10 years. And even if you see taking a look into 10 years, 20 years in the future, right now we stand at about 6 billion. We're expected to grow in 20 years, 1.5 billion people being added to the world in 20 years. And you see there's a huge population growth, first of all. And the way missions would have been done several years ago isn't the way missions needs to be done today. Because there are more and more people out there, meaning that there are more and more people that are lost, more and more people that need to come to know Jesus Christ. So with all this huge explosion, where should we focus our efforts? I want to show you, these are some of the countries that have the biggest population growth in them. 51.4% of the entire world live in just 6 countries. China, India, the United States, Indonesia, Brazil, and Russia. Half of the world's population lives in only 6 countries of the world. You have 20% live in just 14 countries. Pakistan, Nigeria, the Philippines, you can see them all listed up there. And just over 28%, close to 30%, are scattered in 206 countries around the world. Less than 1% of the population, like here in the Bahamas and all the many other countries that you don't see listed there. So you see some of the main countries that we ought to be focusing our efforts on listed right at the very top there. One thing I didn't put in this, but what is interesting, half of the entire world's population is under 15 years old. Half of the world is under 15 years old. Are we fulfilling the Great Commission? Look at some numbers of poverty in the world. The average yearly income of the amount of people in the world, only 1% of the entire world will make $100,000 in a year. 9% will make between $10,000 and $100,000 a year. The next figure is the biggest. 35%, 2.1 million people only make between $6,500 and $10,000 a year. What's staggering is the last figure. Over 1,000 million or 1 billion people only make between $10 and $100 a year. That's their yearly income. And yet, we forget to say thanks to the Lord so many times for all that He's given to us. But can you imagine that? 1 billion people a year, the most they will make is $100 in that entire year. It's the most they will see. Here's some of the way it splits up. Let me pull that down. Africa contains 33 of the world's poorest 50 countries in the world. In Africa, two-thirds of the people live in absolute poverty. 70% have no sanitation, means they don't have any bathrooms, means they don't have any clean drinking water, any clean water to bathe with. 70% of the entire continent of Africa. Half of the world's poorest 24 countries are in West Africa, and therefore the poorest. Here's some numbers that will shock you. The amount the world spends, $750 billion gets spent on military every year. Now compare that to some of these figures. Health and nutrition, $14 billion. Women's reproductive health, $12 billion. Water and sanitation, $9 billion. Basic education, $6 billion. Here's even something that's stranger. The amount an average European people spend on ice cream, $10 billion a year, more than what's spent on education in the entire world every year. Yet you see how much is spent on military supplies, on war supplies. Here's some numbers. An additional $7 billion a year in the next 10 years is needed to educate all of the world's children. $7 billion, and they have no idea where it's coming from, but they need that a year for the next 10 years. Look at the world. Some numbers on the world debt. The world's poorest countries carry incredible $2 trillion of debt. In Nicaragua, the debt is 6 times the size of its annual income. In Tanzania, 6 times more on a debt payment is made payment on debt than is paid on education. So if they're spending $1 billion on education, they're spending $6 billion trying to pay off their debt. What's strange is this, the way the world's wealth is distributed. 3 people in the world are wealthier than 48 countries. The richest 3 people in the world own more than 48 countries in the world. 225 richest people in the world is equal to the income of half the entire world's population. The effects of poverty? There are 35 million poverty-induced deaths a year. Look at some numbers there. 1 in 6 people live on less than 30 cents a day. 1 in 6 people. Imagine if 1 in 6 people in Spanish Wells only had 30 cents a day. How many that would be? 1 in 4 people don't have access to health care. 1 in 4 don't have safe water to drink. 3 in 5 have either unsafe water or poor sanitation. Now you see, if that was happening in the Bahamas or happening in Spanish Wells, we'd be quick to jump out there and do something about it. It's sometimes because it's out there in the world, we want to turn our backs on it. We don't want to look at it. We don't want to notice it, but we've got to deal with it. Here's the one I know for me, first time I saw some of these statistics brought tears to my eyes on child crisis in the world today. Here are just some numbers here I'll throw up. 35,000 children, under 5 die from starvation and malnutrition. 35,000 a day. A year. Under 5. 500 million children do not get enough food to grow up healthy. In an Indian newspaper, they said that 2 children die on average every day in New Delhi's children's homes. Just in that one city. 2.5 million mentally handicapped children in the Arabic-speaking world, and less than 50,000 of those will find formal care. In South African countries, 1 child in 3 has lost a parent through AIDS. Child labor and slavery is going on around the world today. Right now, there are 120 million children between the ages of 5 to 14 working full-time as child labor or slavery. 250 million work part-time. I wanted to read some quotes to you. These are from some countries that listed up there. It says, in Malaysia, children may work up to 17 hours a day on rubber plantations, exposed to insect and snake bites. In the United Republic of Tanzania, they pick coffee, inhaling pesticides. In Portugal, children as young as 12 are subject to heavy labor and myriad of dangers of the construction industry. In Morocco, they hunt in looms for long hours with little pay, knotting the strands of luxury carpets for export. In the United States, children are exploited in garment sweatshops. In the Philippines, young boys dive in dangerous conditions to help set nets for deep sea fishing. In January 1997, a report by the Human Rights Watch of Asia accused the Burmese authorities of conscripting thousands of children from ethnic minorities as a part of a force of 200,000 people pressed into building bridges, roads, and railways. Sudan is home to well-attested reports of child-stealing raids by northern Arabs and the southern population. Some stolen girls have been brought back to the family by their families or to other agencies. The price is said to be about 5 heads of cattle. All of this is going on in our world today. And there's bonded labor. What happens in some of these bonded labor schemes is this. A poor family in need of capital for a medical bill or dowry will sell themselves to an employer. They stay with them until the debt is paid. Sometimes they're physically locked into factories. High interest rates and cheating can spin out the repayments over a lifetime and more. In Pakistan and Nepal, you can pass the debt on and the bondage to the next generation. It's a huge amount of child labor and slavery that's still going on in our world today. Street children. In the year 2000, 200 million children living in the streets in the large cities of the world. 200 million not adults, children, don't have a place to lay their head at nights. Don't have a roof over their head. And here are the countries with the biggest problems of street children. Brazil, India, Mexico, Philippines, South Africa, and the United States. War and the effect it has in children. Look at some of these numbers. In Somalia, civil war, 1992, half of the country's under 5-year-olds were killed. Most of the world's 52 million refugees are children. In a 1997 estimate, 250,000 child soldiers are involved in conflicts around the world. In the last decade, there have been 4 to 5 million children disabled, 2 million killed, 12 million left homeless, 1 million orphaned, 10 million psychologically traumatized. That's the effect that war is having on children today. But then also what's affecting children today is the sex trade. This is very popular in many countries of the world. 10 million of the world's children today are involved right now in prostitution. It's the only way they can get money. Brazil has 500,000 girl prostitutes, just Brazil alone. 500,000. 1 million children a year are recruited into the sex trade. Africa has girls under 10 years old with sexually transmitted diseases. A third of Asia's child prostitutes have AIDS or HIV. And this is Britain, supposedly a modern nation. Recent reports that show that child prostitutes in the age group of 8 to 13 has gone up 5 times in the past. It's supposed to be in the past 10, in the past 7 years. Disease. I'm going to throw some numbers up here for you about the infant mortality rates. Children that don't make it through the past first couple days of their lives. And here are some countries. In Sweden, for every 1,000 children, 5 die. 100% of the people have access to safe drinking water in Sweden. Just thought I'd put those extra numbers there. But look at some of the other countries. Get down to a place like Ghana. 77 out of every 1,000 children die. Only 56% of the people have safe drinking water. Afghanistan, 159 of every 1,000 children die. And only 10% of them have access to safe drinking water. Here's some numbers on AIDS and HIV and also malaria. Right now, 50 million people in the world with HIV. 6 million. 6 million alone occurred in 1999. New infections. 2/3 live in Africa. AIDS is the 4th most common cause of death in the world today. That's over 2 billion deaths alone. 2 million deaths alone in 1998. 19% of all deaths in Africa are caused by AIDS. Look at malaria. 3 to 500 million people develop it every year. Several million die. Most who die are children under 5. 200 to 300 children die from malaria every hour. Every hour. And lastly, a disease, TB. 3 million new cases were reported in 1997. Tuberculosis caused 1.5 million deaths in 1998. That's the disease situation in our world today. Here's some more on war and conflict in our world today. In the past 45 years, there have been 125 wars leading to 40 million deaths. There are 20 wars going on right now, this morning. 20 wars are being fought. There are 14 ongoing peacekeeping missions going on now. And here's some numbers, sir. The people who's sending the arms and the weapons out and the people that's bringing them in. Look at the ones bringing them in. Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Libya, Syria, Vietnam, India, Iran, Cuba. Right on the top there for bringing that weapons in. Egypt and Israel. And we see the numbers of people there that are sending them out. Russia, the United States, France, Britain, and so on. And here is a number on the language and literacy of the world today. Look at the amount of languages that there are in the world today. 6,700 different languages in the world today. Languages with part or all of the Bible. Any portion of the Bible, only 2,000 of those 6,000 languages have any part of the Bible. Only 363 have a complete Bible. 905 can have a complete New Testament. 929 only have a portion, probably the Gospel of John, and that's it. But what is comforting is that only 5% of the languages have a complete Bible, but this represents 76% of the world's population. 76% of the world's people have a complete Bible. But that still leaves out 24% of the world that do not have a Bible. Here's the number there. 1,440 million people do not have a Bible. 6% of the world's population don't have any part of the Bible in their own language. That's 360 million people have never heard the Bible in their own language. 360 million people have never heard what we get to hear all the time, what we get to read every day about the love of God. They just don't have it in their own language. Here's a little bit on literacy in the world today. Stands at 79%, means 900 million people, two-thirds of those women, are unable to read at all in the world today. 130 million children have no access to basic education. 56% of boys and 44% of girls in the world's least developed countries will ever go to primary school. Only 56% will ever attend school. If I stop right there, I ask you, are we fulfilling the Great Commission and reaching people with their needs, with their problems, where they are? You see, it's one thing to go and carry the gospel, but I think as Christians, we're called to go and show Christ's love to them. Because we've been blessed with so much in this part of the world. And yet so many times we want to say, yeah, get saved, yeah, come to know Jesus Christ, but yet we don't show His love to others. We hold back, rather than trying to meet the needs of the world today. Now here's a little bit more that you might be interested in on the world religion and how we're actually doing as far as seeing people come to know the Lord. Seeing people come to know Jesus Christ. Here's some numbers I'll throw up here for you. The amount of people who, the world religions today, there are almost 2 billion people who claim to be Christian. Now in that Christian, that includes Roman Catholic, Jehovah's Witness, Mormon, Orthodox Church, whatever, Lutheran, anyone who carries the name Christian at all with them. That's taken from doing a survey, going around door to door and asking for their religion when they're doing the census. Now, you know that doesn't reflect at all the amount of people that are actually saved. Right behind there are Muslims, over 1 billion. Non-religious, people who just say they're not anything. There are 768 million people, Hindu, Buddhist, atheists, who say there is no God.
150 million people. New religions that are being formed all the time. 102 million people joining them. Look at the number there. The amount of non-Christians in the world today is over 4 billion people. This past summer I went to Amsterdam to attend a conference held by the Billy Graham Association. There were people there from over 200 countries. And I've heard of the saying before, but it never rang clear like when I was there. A guy from India came to me and said, "Rich, why should anyone hear the gospel twice until everyone has heard it once?" How many times have y'all heard the gospel in your lifetime? Yet how many people are there that have never heard the gospel of Jesus Christ? Here's some more numbers about Christianity itself. In that Christianity, 543 million Protestant. We're included somewhere in that group, but even Protestant doesn't mean that they've really accepted Jesus as their Savior. Roman Catholic, 900 million. Orthodox, 215. 74 million Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses. Here's the largest non-Christian populations in the world. Muslim, Morocco is the highest Muslim country in the world. Less than 1% of the people are not Muslims. And in most of these, you see those numbers. Hindu, India has 82% of its people Hindu. Nepal, 89% of its people are Buddhist. You see that list? You see some areas in the world we need to be focusing on. Some areas we need to be reaching people and getting out to them. Here are some things that are also staggering. Countries that are closed or opposed to the gospel today, that you have a problem preaching the gospel in their country. Africa, Asia, Middle East, see some of the names sticking up there. In fact, in some of these countries, you'll be killed for telling anyone else about Jesus. You'll be killed if you are a Christian. Last year alone, there were 165,000 people put to death for their faith in Jesus Christ. More than any other year, 165,000 people put to death for believing in Jesus Christ. Now, I'm going to give you some numbers for some portions of the world. And when you see evangelical there, that means the people we can know are Christians. That's all we can say for sure are Christians, the percentage that are evangelical. Now, first of all, Western Europe, population 367 million and expected to grow to 381 million. It's not growing that quick. See the numbers of the religions, Catholic 50, other Protestant 15, non-religious, evangelical. People we know are Christians, 3.2% of the people of Western Europe. Evangelical workers, 8,000 people among 387 million people trying to reach them. Their needs, this is what they need us to do. Come as evangelists, church planters, pastors, Bible teachers, youth and children's workers, short-term summer team workers. They need people in Western Europe. Here, Middle East and North Africa are some of the needs. Population, 414 million. You see how that population is going to grow in the next 25 years to 642 million. Amount of people that we know are Christians, less than 1% in this entire section of the world. In over 400 million people, less than 1% we know have accepted and heard the good news of Jesus Christ. Only 2,000 people trying to work among over 400 million people. They have many needs there. They have to have Christians lots of times enter in as a other form of employment though. Language teacher, nurse, lecturers, engineers, and while they're in there, share the gospel. Thankfully, there's been more entry freedom into Israel lately. There's Christian schools all in Lebanon that need more teachers to come in and help them. Great needs there. Eastern Europe and Central Asia. You see, the population is staying about the same. But as far as the amount of people that will come to know that know Jesus Christ, the numbers are still low, 1.2%. Just over 1,900 people working there. The needs, planters, Bible teachers, children's workers, pioneer evangelists, people that's going to go out and going to carry the gospel to everyone they run into, start churches on their own. Some of the needs. Asia. There's the population growth. There's a place where people need the Lord. But yet still, you see, evangelical, you might say, well, the numbers are up there, but 3.1% is still not up a whole lot compared to the amount of people that need Jesus Christ. They're expected to grow to 37 million people. 23,000 people working among that huge amount of population there. They need things like people to be on medical staff, people to be school teachers, people to work among students, people to teach the Bible, people to learn languages. Looking down at sub-Sahara Africa, the population is growing there too. From 749 million to 1,298 million. But there we've seen God's Word grow quite a bit. The amount of people claiming to be Christian is 57%, but still the only ones that we know to be Christians is 13.2%. A lot of those are Catholic and some other Protestant churches. 19,000 people working there. They need computer operators, they need printing workers, they need people to work with literature. They need other skilled workers to come and teach them how to do things like gardening, like construction. Those practical things that a lot of them don't know how to do. They need people to come in and help them with that. They need people to come in on a short-term basis. Take a church and help it grow for 3 months. Give some teaching to the people for 3 months, some practical stuff like how to study their Bible. Some of the stuff we've been learning for years and years. Things that they're just lost. They only have a copy of the Bible and that's it, to figure it out on their own. But we've been blessed with so much. Latin America and the Caribbean, here's where we're included. Our population is expected to grow somewhat. 11% of Latin America and the Caribbean, we know, need our Christians. 17,000 workers in this area. They need these people to strengthen churches and leaders. Need people to work with youth and children. Need people who can come in and work alongside local Christians and help them learn how to be leaders. That's Oceania, that's Australia, that's Hawaii, that's the Philippines, and that area. We see here one of the biggest percentages of people that have come to know Jesus Christ. But there's a desperate need here of this whole place to be re-evangelized. They've grown up with the gospel for years, but they need it re-evangelized, people to go carry the gospel again. They need people to go and do things like translation, publishing, printing. People who can train the local Christians to do the work on their own. Now, I threw those numbers up there to you and hope I didn't bore you this morning looking at them. To stop and say, what are we doing as far as reaching the amount of people in the world that need Jesus Christ? Sadly, so many people think their duty for the Lord, the work they do for the Lord every week, is coming and sitting in church. That's what I've done for the Lord this week. I went to church. Well, church isn't for the Lord. Church is for us. We come here to church for the Lord to bless us. But what have we been doing for Him lately? How have we been reaching out for Him? How have we been going and trying to reach the world for Him? I know some of you say, man, I could never go into none of these countries of the world and be no missionary. I'm not a missionary type. Do you realize that the knowledge that you contain right now is far more than they will ever get in a lot of their lifetimes? Just in sitting here and growing up in Spanish Wells in the Bahamas, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years of steady Bible teaching is more than these people will ever get. They need people to come in and help them. They need people to come and share the gospel with them. I'm just going to close by reading a few stories to you. I'm a person who loves stories. I don't know about y'all. I wanted to read a few stories to you that depict how much we need to get out there and share the gospel. So one of my favorites is called The Parable of the Orange Tree. And maybe I've read it to you, maybe I haven't. But if I haven't, I want to read it to you this morning. This man said, I dreamed I was on a Florida road, still straight and empty. On each side of the road were orange trees, groves of them. So as I turned to look from time to time, line after line of trees stretched endlessly through the road. Their branches were heavy with the round fruit. It was harvest time. I wondered as the miles slipped by, how could so large a harvest possibly be gathered? Suddenly I realized that for all the hours I'd driven, I hadn't seen any other person The groves were completely empty of people. No other car passed me by. No houses were to be seen beside the highway. I was alone in a forest of orange trees. But last I saw some orange pickers. Way out, almost on the horizon, I could discern them working steadily. Many miles later, I could see another group. I wasn't sure, but it looked like the earth beneath me was laughing at them, at the hopelessness of their task. Yet the pickers went on picking. I turned a corner of the road, and I passed a sign that said, "Leaving neglected country, entering home country." The contrast beyond the notice was so startling that I scarcely had time to take it in. I had to slow down. All at once, the traffic was heavy. People by the thousands swarmed the road and crowded the sidewalks. What was more startling was the transformation in the orange groves. Yet orange trees were still there in abundance, but they were far from being silent and empty. They were filled with laughter and the singing of multitudes of people. It was the people I noticed rather than the trees. Many people in many houses. I parked the car at the roadside and started to mingle with the crowd. They were dressed in smart gowns, neat shoes, expensive hats, nice shirts, starched shirts, expensive suits. They made me a little conscious of my work clothes. Everyone was so fresh and poised and happy. "Is it a holiday?" I asked a well-dressed woman. She looked startled for a minute. Then her face relaxed and she said, "You're a stranger, aren't you?" Before I could reply, she said, "This is Orange Day." She must have seen the puzzled look on my face, so she went on. "It's so good to turn aside from one's labors and pick oranges one day of the week." "Don't you pick oranges every day?" I asked her. She said, "You can pick oranges at any time. We should always be ready to pick oranges, but Orange Day is the day we devote especially to orange picking." I left her and I made my way further among the trees. Most of the people were carrying a book, beautifully bound in leather, lettered in gold. I noticed the words on one of them, "Orange Picker's Manual." By and by, I noticed around one of the orange trees that seats had been arranged. The seats were almost full, but as I approached the group, a smiling, well-dressed gentleman shook my hand and conducted me to my seat. There around the foot of the orange tree, I could see a number of people. One of them was addressing all the people in the seats, and just as I got to my seat, everyone rose to his feet and began to sing. The man next to me shared with me a songbook. It was titled, "Songs of the Orange Groves." They sang for some time, and the song leader was waving his arms, exhorting the people to sing louder and louder. I grew more puzzled. "When do we pick oranges?" I asked the man who had loaned me his book. "It's not long now," he said. "We like to get everyone warmed up first. Besides, we want to make the oranges feel at home." I thought he was joking, but his face looked serious. After a while, another man took over for the song leader. He read two sentences from his copy of the Orange Picker's Manual and began to make a speech. Wasn't sure if he was talking to the people or the oranges. I looked behind me and I saw there were several groups that were gathering around selected trees to be addressed by other speakers. Some trees had no one around them. "Which trees do we pick from?" I asked the man beside me. He didn't seem to understand. I pointed to the trees round about. "This is our tree," he said. I protested, "But there are too many of us to pick from just one tree. Why, there are more people than oranges." "But we don't pick the oranges," the man explained. "We haven't been called. That's the head orange picker's job. We're here to support him. Besides, we haven't been to Bible college or seminary. You need to know how an orange thinks before you can pick it successfully, you know. Says most of these folks around here have never been to study the manual. It's very hard to understand. You need years of study before it makes sense." "I see," I murmured. I didn't realize that picking oranges was so difficult. The man in the front was still making his speech, and I detected in his speech that there was some rivalry between orange-picking groups like this one. But a moment later, a glow came to his face. "But we are not forsaken," he said. "We have much to be thankful for. Last week we saw 3 oranges brought into our baskets. And now, because of the offering we took, we're completely debt-free from the money we owe on the new cushion covers that grace the seats you sit on." "Isn't that wonderful?" the man next to me whispered, seeing that something was very wrong with the things that were happening around me. All this seemed to be a very roundabout way of picking oranges. The speaker was reaching a climax in his speech. The atmosphere was tense. Then with a very dramatic gesture, he reached toward two of the oranges, plucked them from the branch and placed them in the basket at his feet. Everybody stood up. The applause was deafening. "Do we start picking now?" I asked. "What in the world do you think we're doing?" the man hissed back at me. "Don't you think this tremendous effort is worth celebrating? There's more orange picking talent in this group than in the rest of all of home country. Thousands of dollars have been spent on the tree you're looking at." "Oh," I apologized. "I wasn't being critical. I'm sure the speaker is a very good orange picker, but surely the rest of us could try. After all, there's so many oranges that need picking, and we each have a pair of hands, and we could read the manual." The man said, "When you've been in the business as long as I have, you'll realize it's not as simple as that. There isn't time for one thing. We have our work to do, our families to care for, our homes to look after. But I wasn't listening. Light was beginning to break on me. Whatever these people were, they weren't orange pickers. Orange picking was just a form of entertainment for their weekends. I tried one or two more of the groups around the trees. Not all of them had such high academic standards for orange picking. Some held classes on orange picking. I tried to tell them of the trees I had seen in neglected country, but they seemed to have little interest. 'We haven't picked the oranges here yet,' was their usual reply. The sun was starting to set in my dream. I grew tired of the noise and activity around me, so I got in the car and drove back again along the road which I had come. Soon all around me once again were vast and empty orange groves, but there were changes. Some things had happened in my absence. Everywhere the ground was littered with fallen fruit, and as I watched, it seemed that before my eyes the trees began to rain oranges. Many were laying rotting on the ground. I felt there was something so strange about it all, and my bewilderment grew as I thought of all the people in home country. Then booming through the trees came a voice which said, 'The harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest.'" The story would be so funny if it didn't apply to us so much when it came to winning the lost for Jesus Christ. Yet that's what happens so many times when it comes to reaching others for him. I want to read you one more story. This is about the Fishermen's Society. It says, for months, the Fishermen's Society had been wrecked with dissension. They had just built a new meeting hall, which they called their aquarium. They even had a world-renowned fisherman's manual scholar to lecture them on the art of fishing, but still no fish were caught. Several times a week, they would gather in their aquarium. They would recite portions of the fisherman's manual and then listen to the scholar exposit the intricacies and mysteries of the manual. The meeting would usually end with the scholar dramatically casting his net into the large tank in the center of the hall, and members would rush in excitement to see if there were any fish in the net. There never was, of course, because there were no fish in the tank. Which brings up the reason for the controversy. Why? The temperature of the tank was carefully regulated to be just right for ocean fish. Oceanography experts had been consulted to make sure the environment of the tank was nearly indistinguishable from the ocean, but still no fish. Some blamed it on the poor attendance of the society's meeting. Others were convinced that specialization was the answer. Perhaps several small tanks geared especially for different types of fish. There was even division over which was more important, casting or having the perfect tank conditions. But eventually a solution was reached. A few members of the society were commissioned to become professional fishermen and were sent to live a few blocks away on the edge of the sea and do nothing but catch fish. It was a lonely existence because most of the members of the society were terrified of the ocean. So the professionals would send back pictures of themselves, holding some of their catches and letters describing the joys and tribulations of real live fishing. Periodically, they would return to the aquarium to show slides. After such meetings, people of the society would turn to their homes thankful that their building had not been built in vain. Once again, funny, except it speaks to each one of us about what we need to get involved in. God hasn't called us to sit in church. I met someone just yesterday. They said they were speaking to a lady and they asked her what her spiritual gift was. She said, oh, my spiritual gift is to read the Bible. And it's like, well, what do you do with it? Oh, I just read it over and over and understand it. But God has called us to do so much more than that. To take His Word and to go further with it. To carry it to people who need it. To send it to the people that are lost. Every day, thousands of people go to hell. What are we doing about it? Every day, thousands of people never hear the gospel. If you saw on that slide, 4 billion people do not know Jesus Christ as Savior in the world today. 4 billion people could be left behind if He were to return tonight. What are we going to do about it? Are we going to do like the Fisherman Society and sit here, send off a few people to go do the work and support them? Or are we going to get involved actively in it? Maybe going out into the world on a long-term basis, on a short-term basis. Talking to the people that we meet around us every day. Supporting with our prayers. Supporting with our finances. The people that are out there actively doing the work. Someone once said, if every Christian would take in their home and would just sell the things that they don't need, sell the things that are not necessities, that are just wants that they have in their home, said it would be enough to have ships full of Bibles and missionaries to conquer the entire world with the gospel. Yet we want to hold on to our comforts. We want to hold on to what I enjoy, my lifestyle, the things I have. Yet as I showed you, there are over 1 billion people that don't make $100 a year. 1 in 3 people have to live on less than 30 cents a day. What are we going to do about it? God's given us the resources. Every time I think about a place like the Bahamas, I think of how many missionaries we should have coming out of this country every year. A country that's been blessed and blessed and blessed over and over again. Yet too many times we stay at home. We stay away. We want to let somebody else do it. You've been called as much as I have or as much as anyone else has to go into the world and preach the gospel. I'll close with this. Brother Josh McDowell, as I was sharing with some of the young people home the other day, he met a young man who was in college and he asked him what he was studying. He said, I'm studying medicine. And Brother Josh said, oh, medical missions. He said, no, but if the Lord had to open the door for me to go into medical missions, I guess I would go. And Josh says, open the door. There are thousands of doors opened. You ought to be praying with your life, Lord, I'm going to be a missionary for you. If you don't want me to, tell me. If you don't want me to, stop me. Because the doors are open everywhere you look. I pray that these statistics, these stories have been as much a challenge to you as they have been to me about what we need to be doing for Jesus Christ. Let's close in prayer. Lord, help us to be more thankful every day for what You've given to us. Lord, help us never to take for granted all that You've blessed us with. Lord, this morning, help us to be more willing to go and work for You. Lord, this morning, help us to be more willing to help those that need so much. Lord, this morning, help us not to get lazy. Help us not to get caught up in the things around us, our lifestyle, and all that we have. But Lord, help us to be willing to give of our time, of our finances, of our prayers, of ourselves if we need to see people won for Jesus Christ and to show them Your love. Lord, thank You again for just blessing us with so much of the gospel and Your teaching here in this part of the world. Father, just take and bless us the rest of today as we continue to serve You in Your Son's name.